Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Yes, this hour, very happy to present you with John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch or Crunch Man, born in 1943. John is the original American computer hacker, programmer, and legendary phone freak back in the days before computers even. He's widely known in the world of computer programming and the hacker and security community, and is currently living in Las Vegas and has just written a book about his life and all the exploits and crazy adventures that he's been on over the years with C. Wilson Frazier, a co-author, who may or may not join us at some point in this show. So welcome, John, to the show.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
You sound fine.
You sound fine. Okay, good. Good.
Okay, great.
So, John, what inspired you to write a book at this point?
I had been thinking about a book for the very longest time, even way back in the mid-90s.
Uh-huh.
But I never had the amount of time I need to knuckle down and write it.
Yeah,
I did a manuscript one time, and then when I left San Diego to go to Florida, on my way, my laptop got stolen, and I lost all of that information. So I was very frustrated. I just gave up. Huh. And then later on, I was looking for some co-authors and some people that I could trust. And for a long, long time, Craig Wilson has been living with me for quite a while. And he kept asking me, he says, why don't you let me write the book?
Huh.
Eventually, I gave in and said, okay, let's try it out.
Well, it's a very interesting style, the way he has contextualized your life in relation to events that happened at the times they were occurring in his own life.
Yeah, he kind of talks about his perception of me, and then, of course, I'm talking about my own ideas and events and stories and all that. So I'd say, I'm not exactly sure when, but I think it was like 2015 or something like that,
yeah,
that he became partially involved, and then he became more and more involved. Eventually it happened. The problem we have is this 9-hour time zone, because Craig is living in southern Spain and I'm living in southeastern U.S. So
yeah,
it's a little bit hard to get our synergy going in such a way as to overlap time.
Be at the same time. Now, did you ever, back in the 70s, I guess, when you were really doing the phone freaking stuff in the late 60s, did you ever imagine that there'd be a day like today where you can have collaborative group conversations over
the
phone?
No, back in those days, there was no such thing as collaboration, except if you were a phone freak, you could get on one of those conference calls.
Huh.
Groups of people can talk together in a conference call.
Did they actually have that then? Was that something the phone company really used?
Back in the day, before 1972, you could even talk between the busy signals. You call a popular radio station and the lines are busy, and you can hear people talk between the busyness tones.
Oh, just say a few seconds, a few thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. And then some other phone freaks figured out that if they could open up the sleeve on a switch, they could turn it into a conference. But you have to have all 10 lines in a bank that's unoccupied for that to work.
Oh, so it was a rare event when that could happen.
Yeah, and then, of course, there was the famous 2111 conference, which was mentioned in the Esquire article. That one was the biggest of all.
Oh, that changed everything, right?
There was the AT&T conference bridge, but you had to have a blue box to get into it. Oh. You do key pulse 914052 start, special operator code, and that would put you into the AT&T conference bridge. That one was really cool.
And that was usually mostly for big business at the time, I would imagine.
Yeah, and then after my arrest and bust, of course, I didn't participate in any of that thing. So eventually in the mid-70s, computers started to be coming into an existence, and I got my first Apple II in 1976.
Well, yeah, then that came largely from your friendship with Steve Wozniak.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the famous encounters of you with the Steves at their Berkeley
dorm. I met him at the UC Berkeley dorm. He had a blue box. He wanted me to help him get it working.
This is Steve Wozniak, the founder of Apple, co-founder. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was using digital electronics, and you don't send a digital signal into an analog system.
And he had a digital blue box that he invented on his, or he followed instructions from what he read and built a digital
one. He got the information from the Bell System Technical Journal at Stanford University. That's where he got the frequencies from. The frequencies given in the Esquire article, of course, were wrong.
Yeah, just to throw people off course from that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that the Esquire article would probably get sued if they sent the real frequencies.
Yeah.
So his blue box, basically, he sold one to a friend of mine, and I told him, I says, don't use this box because you're going to get in trouble because the square waves does not really go too well when a system is listening for analog tones.
And they were looking for sound waves,
Yeah, and it would drop a trouble card, and it would definitely cause, you'd definitely get noticed.
Wow.
So the idea is that when you have a blue box, you have to make it pure tones, sine waves, within about 1% of the actual frequencies. It's pretty tight tolerance, I might add.
Yeah, for it to work. Now, what's interesting here, John, is that this was during the height of the Cold War when this was unfolding.
Yeah.
You had been in the Air Force prior to this.
I got out in 68.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, from 68, then you were back in the Silicon Valley area, San Jose.
I got a job at this American defense company called American Astrionics as an engineering tech. I had a secret clearance in the Air Force. It was still good.
So you could get jobs in the defense industry at
the
time.
Yeah, and I did.
Yeah.
But later on, I decided that I really didn't want to work for this company because the op-amps that I was working on were used in missiles to kill people. And I said, no, I don't want to have
Yeah, you're too much of a counterculture guy for that kind of stuff. But let me ask you this. Do you think the Russians were aware of how to hack the phone system, the U.S. phone system back then? Or do you think
it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Really?
I don't really know. I don't think
so. But you never ran into any Russian hackers at the time or anything that suggested that?
Well, when I went over there in, 89, 90, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah, that was when the collapse?
No, this was just before the collapse. I went on a trip called Projects for Planetary Peace. It was a tour group. We were under the control of Intourist, the Russian minders, which controlled just about everything.
Yeah.
But I got a chance to sneak out and use a few payphones, did some hacking on there. I discovered some very interesting numbers.
Could you hold that thought for a second there? And we got to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. We're talking to John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, on his new book, Beyond the Little Blue Box. This is the Dodge Future Show. Welcome back to the Future Show. We're just talking to John Draper, legendary phone freak, computer programmer, security expert, and worldwide unusual counterculture anti-hero.
Why do you say that?
Because John is not exactly mainstream, right? Yeah. You've always been kind of part of the underground, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, see? So that's why I was asking about the Russian hacking the Russian phones when you were over there in 89. It's kind of interesting to do, probably totally different than the American system. And you basically have a very exploratory mind and find such things fascinating, right?
John, can I ask you to stop knocking things around? It's really loud over here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
So we have a caller, I believe.
Yeah, we do.
His battery is dying. He wanted to say hi to you really briefly.
That's right. Dave wants to say thank you, Captain Crunch. Hello, Dave and Salinas.
Hi, Dave and Salinas.
Yeah, John. Yeah, we got Dave and Salinas.
You know, I am surprised. I am still amazed that you're not locked up and sent away somewhere because when I was a young guy.
I'm very public. Yeah. You can go to my Facebook page. I'm facebook.com/JD Crunchman, J-D Crunchman. Go up there and say hi. Mention that you're called on the show if you send a friend request so I can grant you the friend request.
Yes, and the first time I got to hear you was on Art Bell.
Oh, you know where I was? I was at the Pantole State Campground in Marin County, up in the Marin Headlands. It was an inversion, cold down below, and just balmy and warm up top. I had a mattress and laid it right next to the payphone at the Ranger Station. And
that's right. I do remember that. You were getting phone calls from all over the world.
Yeah. Well, Art Bell was getting the phone calls, not me. I was just calling in.
Anyway, so you've been a fan for a long time, huh?
Oh, yeah. Anything you can get a toy out of a cereal box and make it totally blow computers apart. I mean, that's just fantastic.
Yeah. Alan, I gave you the URL to
yes.
my Indiegogo page. So if he wants to order the book and get some Captain Crunch swag or memorabilia, there's a number of options available on the Indiegogo page.
Okay.
And you can get the URL from Alan.
Yeah, I'll put it on our Dr. Future Show links page.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much for it. Sounds like we're having a three-way here. It was really an enjoyable deal to talk to you because it's been a long time since I heard from you the last time.
Is there any particular exploit or anything you'd like to hear from the captain before you go?
Just amazed because when the phone was a rotary phone and then went to a digital phone and somehow he figured it out with the tones, the guy was a genius. He was the first hacker there ever was. And it was only a telephone, but he could make phone calls all over the world if he wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was just
fantastic. I just thought that they locked him up, threw away the key because they didn't want him out in public anymore because free phone calls are not cool.
Yeah. Well, you did bring up an interesting point. I'd like to ask John about that.
Thanks.
What do you think the powers that be most had against you? What were they really afraid of?
The fact that I could get root access to the entire AT&T telecommunications network as if I had a super switchboard capability, which meant that I could call internal access codes, TTC codes, operator access codes. I can do anything that an operator can do, including, of course, just use auto-verify and jump in on somebody's line when they're talking. You could do all of that as if you're an operator, and you could do that from any payphone anywhere in the country. That, of course, scared the heck out of them. I mean, they were just freaking out. They wanted to lock me up and throw away the key. It was crazy.
Were they afraid you could do things that you really couldn't, you know, that were beyond the pale of possibility?
I mean, they were really freaked out. I was able to get access into the Sage Autobahn and the General Purpose Autobahn from a civilian phone from anywhere in the country by using an exploit from Nicholson Creek in Alaska and Murphy Dome. I was able to call through a private phone exchange in there, and then it was the same phone exchange used to switch the telephone system that connects all the Air Force bases together, too. And it was the same switch. So I was able to get past the block that would allow you to go in to do that. So I would call NORAD, blow it off, and land into a direct trunk into the Autobahn. And from there, I could call any military base in, and I'd call into it with flash override priority if I wanted to. Of course, that really freaked a few people out.
I would imagine. So what did you do when you broke into these? So like, I heard you one time you broke into the PA system.
At Charleston Air Force Station, there was a three-digit number that you could call into, and then you could announce over the PA just from calling into this phone line. And I used the Autobahn. You could only do it from a Class A phone. So with an Autobahn, of course, you could call into a Class A phone, no problem. So I called into that number, and I said a few remarks over their PA system that I'm sure they did not appreciate.
like toilet paper crisis or something?
No, that was later on.
Yeah, that was with Nixon, right?
Yeah. That was I found the 800 number into the White House. It was by accident. I was scanning.
Yeah.
And the person answering the line told me to get off the line. And normally, you don't get that. So it raised a few flags to me. So I basically impersonated an AT&T long line switchman, called him back up and said we had some problems with a tandem switching. What number have we reached? And he said, oh, this is the CIA crisis hotline. Oh, thank you.
CIA crisis hotline.
Yeah, it was crazy back then. I mean, there was no security whatsoever. You could call right in there. And I knew what the code was for Nixon because an 800 number goes into the same lines that you would talk on normally.
Yeah.
And so I just used the auto-verify and sat on the line for a while, waited for an incoming call to come in. And when an incoming call came in, everybody was asking for Olympus. And the person that came on the line sounded a heck of a lot like Nixon. So we asked for Olympus.
I am the president.
We asked him for it. And we told them about our crisis in Los Angeles. Yeah. We were out of toilet paper.
What? A toilet paper crisis in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we weren't too appreciative of that. Find out how mad they were.
Well, I would imagine they would trace you at that point, try to find out.
I was calling through a few switch points. I think they would have had some trouble tracing me.
Well, let me ask you this. Instead of just trying to lock you up, why didn't the feds try to recruit you to fight the cold
war. I offered that to him through my attorney. I said, because during the time that I was arrested, as part of my plea arrangement, I had to tell the FBI how I did it. And that was my opportunity to, because what happened was they made an arrangement in a hotel room in San Francisco to meet with some FBI agents.
Yeah.
This was part of my plea arrangement. And I wasn't required to mention any names, but I was just required to mention how I did it. I talked about how I was able to get into the Autobahn. And they had a person from the Pentagon there. They weren't able to get it to work. No. So I wasn't going to demonstrate it. So sorry, folks. Not this time.
It seemed to me like you would find like the Russian system far more primitive than the...
Yeah, it was all step-by-step switching equipment. It was using some very old-fashioned, I think it was Hungarian or something like that, old Eastern Europe switching equipment, pulse dial, very noisy. You couldn't even use modems on it, except you could use there's a certain kind of modems that you can
use. U.S. robotics modems, I think.
Yeah, U.S. robotics, that's right. Yeah, I met the San Francisco-Moscow teleport people on the Moscow side.
Right. Yeah, Joel Schatz and Diane.
Exactly. And then when I was there, they had two things that were illegal in Russia, a fax machine and a modem.
Right. Yeah, they had to lock them up after they used them.
Oh, yeah, they had a special room. You had to sign in. Whenever you go into the room, you had to sign in your name, who you're going to fax to, or whatever you're going to do with a modem. They're only allowed to call through the San Francisco-Moscow teleport.
That's right. Now, this was a whole other chapter in your life. This was like 20 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
In San Francisco, when the wall was collapsing and all kinds of freaky...
standing on the wall, yeah.
Yeah, freaky stuff.
Yeah, and then I got invited by a bunch of German people. We broke into Stasi headquarters. They were all rifling the place, and I went in and looked around. Oh, my God, the place was crazy.
Well, the Stasi HQ was the secret police for the uninitiated on the East German side, and right, they were feared. They were one of the most feared organizations, the secret police in the world.
And the whole internet, the whole government just literally collapsed. It just evaporated. All the government building offices were all, some of them were closed, some of them were locked.
Yeah.
You were able to break in and you could walk around and everything. I was on the eastern side during New Year's Eve. I got up on the wall and waving at the CNN cameras. And then I hopped on the other side, East German side. I was wandering around East Germany for a while after New Year's Eve. Ran across this East German conscript and gave me a ride back to West Germany because this was right about the time the wall opened up.
What a crazy time. I was just in Berlin a couple months ago and I talked to somebody who was there, lived about a mile away. They walked down there to see what was happening at the wall at the time.
Yeah, it's still there. That's like a kilometer of the wall still there.
That's right.
Very well decorated with graffiti and artwork and everything like that, depicting the Cold War and everything. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. And now you can get a tour of the Holocaust Museum right next to Hitler's.
I got a tour of the Stasi Museum. And I got a tour of the Hemp Museum.
Uh-huh.
That was a really great place, Hemp Museum. You got to go check that out. East Germany.
In East Germany, wow.
Huh. Yeah. It's an eastern part of Berlin, rather.
Wow, trip.
That was pretty cool.
Fascinating times. Okay, can you hold on?
It's all in my book, by the way. It's all in the book. Adventures are in the book. You're going to love the book, guys. Go out and get it.
Beyond the Little Boobex. Can you stay on?
Oh, yeah. I'm here. I'm here until you're done.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right. We're talking to John Draper on the Dr. Future Show. We'll be back after the break. Thank you, Mrs. Future. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Captain Crunch, John Draper, Beyond the Little Blue Box, his new biographical adventure, which he wrote with C. Wilson Frazier. So,
I have a question for you, John.
He says,
I'm just curious, since you call yourself an anti-hero, like, what do you stand for? What kind of things are important to you in this current modern
freedom
world
Freedom of information, freedom to communicate, freedom to do what you want to do.
Yeah, how's that work?
Freedom to not be spied on by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom to not be afraid to use social media or electronic communications today. Freedom to be able to choose which communication program I would like to use. All the time I use Signal. That's my main application that I use, is Signal.
What do you like about Signal?
It's very secure. You get the source code, you get up on GitHub and you get it, you look at the code, you verify that it doesn't have any backdoors in it. It rates 7 out of 7 on the EFF's hit parade of secure programs.
Nice. Yeah, I noticed we had a very nice video connection with it too. It does full video. Like Skype.
It does both video, audio, and I've also got WhatsApp. I don't use it that much, but it's a little bit better security than a normal phone line, but it's owned by Facebook, of course. And then, of course, there's Telegram. Telegram is often used by people in Europe, and that's what Craig is on. He uses Telegram. I met him at the Jupiter Bash. Remember the comet they did at Jupiter?
Yeah. Yes, the mid-90s.
That party.
Schumacher.
Schumacher Levy.
Yeah. Levy, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was at the Trocadero or something. Or I'm not sure where. Some club in San Francisco.
Yeah, so that does bring up another thing. I've got a question is, what do we mean by counterculture? I mean, okay, so let's look at the kind of, what do you mean by counterculture? What do you, where do you like to hang out for fun, I guess, or your friends? Who are your friends? I've seen you at geek events, and I've seen you at rainbow gatherings.
Rainbow gatherings, rave parties, computer conferences, but really cool computer conferences. I'm not talking about the lamer computer conferences like DEF CON or HOPE. I'm talking about the real computer conferences.
Macworld,
yes. The one where there's really old school people that are there.
Oh, where you meet the interesting people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I like, remember that Schmooze Fest we had in Santa Cruz a couple of years ago? Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
You invited me, and of course your party, the one that you did, the Crystal Ball. That was just epic.
Yeah, let me toot my horn for a second on this. This was a gathering in Silicon Valley at a place called the Decathlon Club, which no longer exists as far as I know. As a journalist for Biden, InfoWorld, and other publications at the time, I got to know a lot of the tech people that ran the Valley, because journalists basically have access to CEOs and CTOs and CFOs and that sort of thing. I thought some of them were cool enough that they could meet what we call today the cultural creatives, the people that actually are the artists.
I think we gave it a name, Alan. We called it the Silicon Brotherhood.
Yeah, the Silicon Brotherhood. That came with Luke Sala.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in 89. But back in 84, we did have a kind of a brotherhood. There were a lot of us that liked to have serious fun and play with the tech and maybe combine the two and create a party where we could have interesting people.
Like the Electronic Cafe, remember?
Yes.
Electronic Cafe people.
Yes, yes. That
and
was,
they were doing cutting-edge technology. They had this space bridge. I think, what they call it, a hole in space or something. They had a video connection between somewhere in Santa Cruz, I guess, in the East Coast, and they had this big video screen in this camera. So you had pictures of people walking around in New York. When you're in Santa Cruz, you can wave at them, and they can wave at you. And this was back way before people did streaming.
That's right. They had a satellite to be able to do that.
Yeah.
That was a cool.
You had to have a lot of expensive toys to be able to do that kind of stuff.
That's right.
It's all anybody can do it, right on your old smartphone.
No, it's up to your creative mind. The Hole in Space project was where you would be walking by a department store window in New York City, and you'd see the likes of us waving to you in Santa Cruz. There, it was actually L.A. There was Century City.
I'm not sure where it was.
But they were right ahead of their time, and I think they came to our party in 1984.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you were a DJ,
right? Kit Galloway. His name is Kit Galloway.
Kit Galloway, yeah.
Yeah, we've had Kit as a guest on our show.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the angry old man who shakes his fist at the clouds.
Okay.
He was upset about these artwork that are being placed in low Earth orbit that would reflect light and be a bother to astronomers, but be pretty art, sort of space art.
I heard something about that space art stuff recently, actually.
Yeah, and he's very angry at it. He doesn't want to see anything like that in the sky. It just interferes with our ability to have a clear sky.
National Geographic has this program on called Mars, which is on my DVR, and I've been watching that. It talks about what's happening in the future. And it's all about, the narration is basically people that are settling and colonizing Mars are basically ripping it up and already screwing it over, drilling and blasting and all that stuff. And you should check it out. It's like they're destroying Mars like they're destroying Earth.
Yeah, they're humans now doing it to Mars.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, okay, that brings up another issue. As a hacker, you've had access to a lot of information over the years. What do you think the truth is about some of the big things like UFOs? Do you think aliens exist?
Well, obviously they exist. Yeah. You're not going to get the government to admit that, though.
Why not?
I got the Greys, and of course, they allegedly had been some kind of a deal with the government on those. And then, of course, everybody's been talking about the reptilians. They're the bad guys.
Usually. The reptilian brain is pretty bad. I mean, I'm considered.
I follow every single UFO show. Yeah. Definitely. That guy from the Disclosure Project. Stephen Greer, yeah. I've been watching a lot of his YouTube videos. Yeah. And also this other person, as I remember, let me bring that up. I'll give you the name of it.
Yeah. Have you had any UFO experiences yourself?
Well, I was in the Air Force. This was during a whiteout condition. We picked it up on radar coming in at really unrealistic speeds. This was definitely not something that...
Some anomalous signal?
Yeah, I mean, none of us had anything that flies that high or fast.
Hmm.
You know?
I mean, like Mach 10 or something?
Yeah, something like that.
A light in the sky? Or?
Well, the trouble was, it was a whiteout condition.
You couldn't see anything.
Actually see it.
I see.
But we picked it up on the radar, and it was metal. It was hitting us. It was a pretty big target. Huh. From what I could tell.
And, like an airplane size?
Yeah. No, we don't know. It was definitely flying a lot higher and a lot faster than an airplane.
Huh. Were you told to ignore those things when you're in the Air Force? Or how do you report?
Well, we were told not to talk about it, of course. Typical, you know.
Yeah.
You know how the military is on those things.
Oh.
You're not supposed to talk about those things.
Right.
It's like they're not really on the matter of subjects per se, you know.
Do they think they have a government division that studies that, like the X-Files kind of thing?
Probably, you know, but I bet it's all secret stuff. You know, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at least, you know.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, Project Blue Book, the series is coming out next month. It's supposed to promise
to be. Yeah, in fact,
good.
Project Blue Book is coming on one of these channels pretty soon. I think it's coming on this coming Sunday, something about Project Blue Book.
Yeah.
It's a documentary or something coming on TV sometime soon.
Do you think there'll ever be public disclosure to the extent where this becomes more of an open topic?
I've been getting reports that they're probably going to make some type of a big earth-changing announcement in the next year or so, but I'm not keeping my fingers crossed. You never can tell, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it kind of challenges the control of anything. You know, if these things really do fly at super speeds beyond anything we have, it makes our whole spending trillions of dollars on defense equipment seem like a joke, right? So why would we?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would we do that? So the whole paradigm is based on not believing it and holding it.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So it's nuts, man. I forget that girl's name, but she was one of the big, she talks a lot about UFOs and the aliens and stuff like that.
I think what's fascinating was that they started to appear around nuclear bombs when they were going on.
Yeah, I saw that documentary.
Yeah.
I saw that documentary. I had to download it off the torrent in order to watch it, but I definitely saw it.
Would aliens be interested in human explosions of nuclear devices? I guess it would be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They got something here on YouTube Prime called UFO TV Presents UFOs and Nukes. There's a whole bunch of stuff on here.
And in your book, you talk about how you witnessed a nuclear explosion.
Yeah, that was really nuts. It was 1962. I was on a vacation. Mm-hmm. And we were going through on our way from Vegas to Lake Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
And we were driving on the road going down 95. We picked up on the radio that they were going to have a nuclear test at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, oh, wow, that's near where we are, isn't it? And we says, yeah, I think so. Later on, we...
Went anyway?
Yeah. When it went off, then we were like very close to it. I was within line of sight.
Wow.
To the fireball. I had radiation burn on my arm.
Did you see the blast? Did you? It was so bright you had to look down?
Couldn't see anything. I mean, it was so bright. I could put my hands in front of my eyes to block the light.
Wow.
Just see the bones in my hands.
Really? Like an X-ray?
It was the fiercest light you've ever seen in your life. I never, never, never imagined that to be so...
So bright. Wow. We're talking with John Draper, Beyond the Little Blue Box. This is when he witnessed a nuclear bomb back when he was a young boy.
Yeah.
Can you stay on for one more segment?
Yeah. Her name is Linda Moulton. That's her name.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Yes.
That's her name.
Yes. Yeah, she's a regular on Coast to Coast. Fascinating.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll see you
after the break. Anybody want to talk to John? This is your chance. 831-479-1080. Give us a call if you want to ask John Draper a question.
Hi, MZ here with egg on my face. Let me explain. You know that ad we've been running for Beyond Organic Cultured Whey 3-Day Cleanse Detox? You know, the one where I keep talking about Sweat-O Gold? Well, Bill Graff came up to me the other day and wanted to know how sales of that product were going. I said, not all that good, to which he replied, doesn't surprise me a bit. You are mispronouncing the name of the product. It's Swear-O Gold, not Sweat-O Gold. No wonder sales are no good. Who in the world would want to buy a product you consume that conjures up thoughts of drinking sweat? It's gross. Can't you see that? I immediately realized Billy was right, and boy, did I feel stupid. Here I was thinking I was cool pronouncing Swear-O as Sweat-O, and thereby coming off with an Hispanic sort of ring to the name. Okay, I blew it, so let's fix it now. Do the 3-day Swear-O Gold Cleanse Detox. You'll probably feel great and lose weight. I'm going to do it myself. 6 bottles a day of Swear-O Gold with no food for 3 days. We've got it all here at KSCO Studios for pickup, and the entire amazing Cleanse Detox costs less than $100. A good deal to jumpstart good health. Join me.
It must be. It has to be. With that big sound, it's gotta be KSCO.
Welcome back to the show, folks. We're talking to John Draper, Beyond the Little Blue Box, and we're just talking about his experience, which he documents in his new book, of seeing a nuclear blast firsthand in the Nevada desert.
The EMP effects were what really, really got my really interest. And there was this...
EMP, the pulse, right? The magnetic pulse.
Magnetic pulse. Yeah, it completely wiped out our car. It couldn't point. I had a little 6-transistor radio. It was on at the time. It was just this big loud crackle on the radio, and it just died. Yeah. The radio was old. It was germanium transistors back then. Silicon transistors were really expensive back then. We had an old tube radio. I had an old car.
Uh-huh.
6-volt system, and it was totally wiped out. The whole ignition car wouldn't start. It just stalled. We had to wait for hours and hours for somebody to come down the road. That's when they opened. Because we went through the roadblock just before they closed it. And we couldn't drive very fast because we were pulling a big trailer.
Well,
and they're over on a fishing trip.
You were the last car through before the road was closed, huh?
Yeah, they closed the road. This was July 20th, I think, somewhere in July.
Did you ever see what blast that was? You know, did you look it up?
Yeah, I went to the Atomic Testing Museum, and the only one that I found was this thing called the Davy Crockett test. It was out in the Nevada desert. It was really close to where I was.
And so that might have been
and
it.
And that was
then.
A small nuke, but this one was... Boy, if that's a small nuke, I sure hate to see what a big nuke.
Well, I understand they got pretty big. This was towards the end, right, of the above ground testing.
Yeah, and then when I got home, I got this nasty, blistery red thing on my arm, and I just told my parents that I fell asleep in the sun, and my arm was exposed. I didn't dare tell anybody about that. I kept it pretty quiet.
Wow. So you had a permanent sunburn.
I had really strict parents. My father was stationed at Travis Air Force Base. That's where I was living at the time. Also, I was in the Civil Air Patrol.
Right beforehand, Me too. I was in the Civil Air Patrol briefly.
Yeah. I made Cadet of the Month, man. I got a chance to fly a P-33.
Whoa.
A P-33 jet, trainer jet. I got a ride in one of those.
That's fun. Hey listen, we got a call for you.
I got a friend for you on the phone here.
Hey.
Hello, MZ.
Yeah, hey, this is Future and Dr. Future, and wow, Captain Crunch himself.
Yeah.
I don't know if he remembers, but one of the best radio shows I ever did on KSCO or anywhere was with him and Joy Bubbles about 20-something years ago. I don't know, probably 25 years ago or something like that.
Joy Bubbles?
Joy Bubbles. Remember Joy Bubbles?
Joe Ingresia.
Exactly.
Joe Ingresia. Who was he?
He was the guy.
He was the blind guy.
Oh, right.
He was a blind guy who had perfect pitch, and I know he moved to heaven a few years ago because I was trying to look him up and get him on the radio again with you, just sort of to do a reprise of that wonderful radio program we did in 1993 or 4 or something like that. But I found that he had passed.
John, please stop eating on the air. We hear it all.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we hear everything.
Yeah, it sounds he does things like I would do.
I didn't realize the microphone was so sensitive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yep. It's real sensitive. You can hit mute if you want.
You know, you're eating, you're going to the bathroom, you're taking something out of a plastic wrapper. We can hear you.
Mr. Open Source.
Even I don't do that.
I know. Well, but took years of training, though.
Yeah.
So you have any questions at all, Michael?
Well, I do. I just made me think of Joe Ingrassia, and I dialed a series of numbers on that show and asked Joe what numbers I had dialed, and he told me. It was amazing. And then listening to going back and forth to Cap'n Crunch about the good old days, I almost got a blue box. I almost built a blue box myself, but I knew it would only be a matter of about 30 minutes or so before I'd be in the penitentiary, so I didn't bother.
But I do have
one question that doesn't have to do with your guest. Where in the world did that commercial come from, that 8-year-old commercial for Sweat-O Gold? I mean, where did that come from?
Well, you can talk to our Christmas crew, people putting the slate together. I could guess, but
Billy, maybe?
I'll let you do it.
Yeah. Well, Billy,
it was very entertaining. It was one of the most entertaining commercials we ever did, but it doesn't belong 8 years later on the radio as a current commercial.
Well, it's from 2014, MZ.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, thanks, MZ. We'll see you for the walk in a little while.
I'll see you in a few minutes. I'm coming up on Morrissey Exit.
All right. All right, till then.
Good to know. Soon.
Take care. So, John, for the uninitiated, MZ was mentioning a name, Joe Ingrassia. Can you tell the audience a little bit about the background on that?
The first time I heard about him was when I was stationed at Charleston Air Force Station, Maine. I heard it in the news.
Uh-huh.
This kid was using perfect pitch, and he was whistling free phone calls. He was in the news at the time.
Wow.
He got busted at that time. And then I didn't know who he was until I met Denny and all the people back in San Jose, the phone freaks that got me into all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he was part of that group. And then I finally met him on the phone. There was a time when I had to go on a business trip. I actually had a chance to stop by and see him because it was in a city that was really close to where he lived.
So he
figured I think it was in Memphis, Tennessee.
Huh. So he was really, really one of the pioneers in figuring all this out.
Oh, he's the blind kid. He's the guy that can just listen to anything and know exactly where the call is, what switch it was going through, just by the click and the bleeps and the.
Did he figure it out by just trying experiments and whistling in different ways?
I'm sure he did all kinds of things.
Literally had hours and hours.
I'm not exactly sure which one he did, but there were so many people that were doing it. You know,
so he was just one of the pioneers.
There's probably about 15 or 20 of the blind collective people. The elite. These are the people that are just really into the switching equipment, really into hearing the chirps and stacking tandems. And
they're all blind.
Go out on these special phone trips to weird off-the-wall places, these old towns that are not modernized, and they freak on the payphones a lot.
Hmm.
And Blaine Washington had a really interesting system. You dial 7-1, hit the hook switch, flash the hook switch, and you get a little chink noise, and then you can just dial with a dial any number in the world.
Hey, let me ask you this. Did you ever meet any of the AT&T designers of this system?
Never.
Really?
Never. Not even. During the time that I was being questioned by the FBI and the Pentagon people about what I could do, I says, you know, you guys, why don't you guys hire me? Because I have really good ideas how you can secure your system. Why are you guys want to lock me up and throw away the key? You know, I'm willing to cooperate. I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to help button up these leaks.
Yeah.
But they didn't want it. They didn't want to have anything to do. They wanted to throw me away.
When are we talking now? Are we talking about in the 70s?
The FBI, yeah. This was like mid-70s.
So it's much more innocent time.
Yeah,
you had people like Woz was still having his joke of the day answering machine kind of thing, right? People were into crank phone calls.
And so the FBI was just doing everything in their power to get as much information out of me as they possibly could. And I cooperated in every respect. I gave them anything they wanted to know. No problem. As long as I wasn't supposed to mention any names. That was part of the deal.
Uh-huh. So you didn't want to be snitching on anyone, but you tell them what you knew. Like
exactly.
The frequencies.
How to get into the system and what numbers to dial and how to get into the Autobahn and all that. You know.
They took careful notes on all that?
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
I was very specific about it. I told them exactly what to do. I told them you have to get the 32 and the 20s kind of levels exactly right in order to do it.
Do you think?
To kind of sneak it in there. Yeah. You know, it takes quite a bit of diddling with tones in order to get it to work. And I told them I was successful 90% of the time. I could get into NORAD. And from NORAD, from there, I could go anywhere else I wanted to go in the military network, both Audubon and Sage Audubon. There's two kinds of Audubon, two flavors, Sage
and... And I guess they were scared, but, scared of you maybe?
Yeah, I understand. I don't even think Audubon exists anymore.
Were they worried that the Russians would get a hold of you?
I'm not sure. I don't think that was the case. But the thing that they were freaked out was just what I could do with the Audubon. I had the power to do a flash override call into the Pentagon. And that would have caused quite a few eyebrows to raise, to say the least.
I wanted to take the last second of the show here to say you got a Soleil on the phone who says she has some mutual friends, and then we're going to go out because that's the end of the hour.
Yeah, boy, that went by fast.
Sure did. So say hello.
Hi. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Roy Kaler says hello.
Oh, tell Roy to call me. I've been trying to call him.
Hi, Roy.
Yeah, and I wanted to play a little bit of Tuesday afternoon for you guys.
All right,
make it quick.
Great.
We got 1 minute. Okay, go, well, Soleil.
We can go.
You ready?
Out with that.
Here we go. Okay. I got it queued up.
Okay.
Hold on. And then just this little bit would be great for some of your little blurbs on your show.
50 seconds, and then
Here we go.
KSEO Santa Cruz, Dr. Future Show is gone till 2019.
Next year.
And go ahead.
Okay, we're talking with John Draper. John, Beyond the Little Blue Box, it's your new book. Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it. This is we're joining. She's trying to see if Tuesday afternoon works for our show.
We'll try again next time, Soleil. Great
still
suggestion.
There.
Yeah. So go to the Indiegogo page. You can also get it on Amazon in ebook form as well. Ebook, hardcover, softcover from Amazon.
Yeah, I just bought it on Amazon and Kindle. Beyond the Little Blue Box.
Yeah, you could search for it, or you could go through our Indiegogo page, get a whole bunch of Captain Crunch memorabilia. You get Captain Crunch whistles and blue box.